Thank you very much. Thank you also for the invitation, and I really must say I love this meeting and I love to speak in front of this audience. Although not everything I will say will be completely new to everybody here, I still will make the case for sustainable solutions for endangered languages data. The issue of sustainability came up several times, so I would like to present the solutions, or at least what we work on in order to provide solutions in this respect. So I will give a very short introduction. We'll thematize the sustainable data from linguistic fieldwork, present our institution, the language archive, the technology, the tools that we develop, discuss open access issues, and if is time, I will give a short summary. So, introducing our division, this is old world, with this is work from the last 15 years or so from the technical group at the Max Planck Institute for Psycholinguistics, a German institute in the Netherlands. And now a part of this technical group split off into a separate unit, which is now called the Language Archive. This institute worked on sustainable solutions for digital data for a long time. Really early days, they started to think about what to do with the digital data this institute produces every day, experimental data, language acquisition data, and so on, but also fieldwork data. What do we do with it? How can we make sure that this data is around still in 10 or 20 years or so? And a very important development came in the early 2000s when this institute or this technical group was chosen to be the heart of the documentation of endangered languages research program funded by the Volkswagen Foundation, which gave us not just money but also new things to worry about, new things, new people to interact with, and a new international context to develop this work. But integration with other centers and European data initiatives and so is now a very important aspect of our work. A little bit more about the DOBIS, Documentation of Endangered Language Program. As I said, this is an initiative by the Volkswagen Foundation, which is not directly related to the car producer, despite the name. It's a scientific funder. The Volkswagen Foundation and German linguists, I think, were very, very early thinking about language documentation, or at least the issue of language endangerment. The first call for a summer school, immediately reacting to the call by Krauss and others in 1992, was done already in 1993 to a summer school about fieldwork and language description. And then 6 years later, the first call for language documentation came out. And this is what then was called the DOBIS program. It is a research infrastructure of individual teams, independent teams, but they have a central steering committee and advisory board, so it's a self-organized research program. And the heart is this center of this technical project and the language archive, which now is called the Language Archive. So up to now, there are 65 individual projects and some 90 target languages, and we have data about 60, 65 languages already in the archive. The program is ending. The last call was out last year, but it is, for Volkswagen standards, a very long project of 15 years total, or even more. The main features of this language documentation program is a focus on digital data. This was new 10 years ago. Now that is standard in what we are all talking about. That language should be documented in their cultural context is very important for DOBIS. That different disciplines contribute to it, anthropology, and that the data which is produced is relevant for all those other neighboring fields is a key aspect which was addressed really early in the DOBIS program. Partnership with the community is a strong aspect of most DOBIS projects. Many train their speakers or interact on an equal level with their speech communities. An early emphasis on legal and ethical questions, and I think this is one of the most important points, is that in the early phase of DOBIS, we discussed very much about how to do this and what to do in the same way so that consistent data sets would come out and that the archive could provide access in an organized, unified manner. And so having a common workflow, common technology, common methodology is a very interesting and important aspect of this. We also disseminate language documentation in training courses, workshops, and there is a book about language documentation which came from the DOBIS context. So, sustainable data. Most data in the world, digital data, is on private hard disks, on personal computers, only temporarily important emails, short Word documents, messages, PDFs, and so on. The more important for more people data become, the more important it is that it is preserved in on long term, and the more important it is that it goes to some central repository where it can be accessed by many people. So at the top of this pyramid of data, you have data which is of societal value, patrimonial data, and endangered languages data is on this top of this pyramid. So we should think really early to put it in places which have a high constituency, where the risk of loss is minimum. In the case of fieldwork data and language data, I think most of you are aware of this. So we start with audio recordings and video recordings. This is what I call primary data. Then this data must be annotated in order to be interesting or accessible in the future by people who don't speak the language. And you can have annotation on different levels. The most basic one is a transcription in the original language, orthographical or phonological or whatever. And you need also a translation in order to make the material accessible to researchers who don't have any knowledge about the language. But you can, of course, add as many other linguistic tiers or levels of annotation, morphosyntactic comments, and so on and so on. This is what I call secondary data. But all this is not accessible and usable if you don't describe it from outside. So what you need is also metadata in order to describe the situation, why this data came about, but also the technical character of the data, which formats, who has access to it, and so on and so on. A conjunction, a bundle of several audio and video files and annotation files and a metadata file is what we in our system call a session. So we store sessions, and sessions can be searched and accessed via the metadata. The challenge for sustainability is manifold. The most important aspects are the physical level. So we all know that physical carriers of digital data are very vulnerable. And a CD can be crashed, a hard disk can fall down, or it will go out of use after a couple of years. So you need to have several copies, and you need to constantly migrate from one physical carrier to the next in order to ensure that data is still alive. And the bigger the center is and the more data it deals with, the more easy is it to do that. But also, accessibility is a problem on the logical level, because the formats change so much. Everybody who still has WordPerfect 5.1 files on some old diskette or so knows what I'm talking about. It is really difficult to access old data formats. So what is important is to adhere to standards and to be clear about standards early from the process of producing and collecting data on. Today, Unicode is, I think, one of the standards that everybody should adhere to. XML is a good standard for linguistic or language data. Other open formats that can be accessed and understood later, while proprietary formats usually fall out of use and nobody else then later knows what this data is about and what the formats and the details are. So if new formats come up, open formats and well-documented formats can more easily be converted from an old to a new format than proprietary ones, for instance. But whenever you transform, there's the risk of loss of data. So you have to also to be clear from which format to which format which was converted in order to explain artifacts, for instance, in audio files and so on. So while physical archives have the principle, the less often you touch a certain piece of paper or another physical object, the better for the object, the more stable it is. For digital archives, exactly the opposite holds, right? The oftener you access it, the earlier you discover format changes or software problems that you can still fix. If you only access it after 15 years, you will have a problem. Probably you won't have a converter at hand or something. So to use archives is an important aspect to disseminate it. So, what is the status of the language archive? Currently, we have about some 80 terabytes of data described by these metadata sessions. We use PIDs, so persistent identifiers, so that you can from outside access individual files, individual pieces of data, not just the sessions, but also the individual files. And we are implementing policy rules so that for every file it is clear to which other machine it has to be copied, how frequently, who has access rights, and so on and so on. We have data about some 200 languages or so. also chart acquisition, language acquisition data with the Dutch national corpus, sign language corpora, and so on. The Dobus part is only a small part of this, actually. It has, as I said, some fixed languages, some 25 terabytes. This might have to be updated. All this data is in principle accessible online, but for some data you need the right access rights. And we are now engaged very much in software and infrastructure development, but this depends very much on project funding. So Dobus was one project, but we also have other European projects. So most of our developers and technicians are paid in short-term contracts from certain projects. But establishing the new unit, the language archive, with 6 to 8 fixed positions is one step to have something sustainable, a new unit which will be there even in 10 or 20 years. This here is a map of the Dobus program, of the field sites of the project so far. I think the last round projects are not yet in here. We have some 6-7 new projects this year. But we also give our language archiving technology to other centers who want to set up local, regional, national language archives. This is all open software and it's all free, and we hope to install and give training and advice. So especially in South America, but also in other locations in the world, there are regional language centers or language archives that use our software and use the same standards and can, this is not the most current map. There is something in Lima, for instance, also, and there are other plans for other centers. So currently our data is automatically copied inside the MPI to a backup server, of course, but also to 2 big computer centers in Germany, and these also have their internal backup strategies. So we've got some 6 copies synchronized all the time at 3 different locations, and we have these regional language archives, and part of our data in future will be synchronized with the respective regional center if they wish to do so. We are thinking about an initiative how to replicate data in a safe way, not just the files but also the access rights and all the other metadata issues connected with it. We have, and I think this is a very positive thing to say, we have a guarantee by the Max Planck Society that at least a bitstream of the data is preserved for the next 50 years, or now 45 years, as this contract is some 5 years old by now. So what are the formats and the standards that we use? We have certain standards for primary data. These are mostly open standards and easy to access standards. In future, we will have lossless compressed data, which will increase the size of our archive tremendously when you have high resolution, high definition data. For secondary data annotation, most of our data is in the ELAN annotation standard. ELAN is the tool that we develop. But we also allow for other standards like the toolbox standard format, an SIL developed standard, which is plain text and easy to understand, but very difficult to transform consistently or to use consistently in the first place. We also accept PDF files, although this is not an open format, and we might have some problems in 50 or 20 years if Adobe is not around anymore, who knows. For metadata, we use the EMDI standard that was developed with our collaboration, and in future we will use the component metadata standard, which allows more flexibly to describe resources, which are not only field resources, but all digital humanity language resources. This all is based on a set of tools and web services that we develop and that we call, as I said already, language archiving technology. And as I said, we give out this language archiving technology to regional centers. So we collaborate in other projects, especially in European projects. One very important one is the Clarin project. We also participate in the DASIS project. These are all European projects in the framework of European Strategy Forum of Research Infrastructure, the ESFRI road. But we also have individual international collaborations like the Relish project on lexical database standards with the US. So what is this language archiving technology? It supports the whole life cycle of linguistic, at least fieldwork data. So from the data collection, recordings, annotation, we use ELAN and Lexus in order to annotate and analyze linguistic data. Then we use the IMDI, or in future the SINDI standard, with the RBIL metadata editor in order to describe the data. LAMUS is an online service that every LRT, every language archiving technology implementation offers, where people can upload their data easily and manage it and organize it in a tree. Then we have the internal procedures to copy and to archive this data properly, and via the metadata, but also via content search, the data can then be accessed, and you can create relation and comment on it and so on. These are parts that we are working on now. This is a whole list of software that we have developed or that we are developing, and their respective status. I won't go through this list for reasons of time. So this is a screenshot of the IMDI browser, where you can go through the archive in a browsing format. This is not the most attractive way. It is a very basic way to access the language data. For native speakers, for instance, that is definitely not the way to go. So we also help to set up archives or websites where people can have an easier access. But this is very much work in progress. Instead of just showing you the screenshot, I can also show you the part of the Avicii archive, that is a language which I have documented in the last 10, 12 years or so, where you see this green bundle. You see, as a session on the right height, on the right hand side, you see the metadata or parts of the metadata associated with this, and you have a description of the content and of the genres and so on. And for some of these data sets, you can then click on and say, I would like to see this individual file, or I would like to download it. And for annotation files in the LAN format, you can click on it, and then you get this interface where you can see the annotation. So here you've got a Portuguese translation, some comments, and the original transcript, and some comments and so on, and that you can play in the web browser if we have access to it. And if we would have audio here connected, then you would see how he is relating about his life story. Okay, so this I showed you. We also have Lexus, where you can create lexical databases with multimedia material attached. We have the ISOCAT registry, where concepts can be registered, as well metadata concepts, but also linguistic terms, so that people can use different terms but refer to the same entry in this registry, so that you can search for nouns and you will also find hits for substantive or some other linguistic term. So, getting to the end, open access and legal ethical issues. So, of course, open access to data is something that everybody wants, and more science acknowledges this, and we have heard a lot about it. In the case of endangered language data, this is a very important issue, as this data can't be reproduced, so every data set is important for a whole big community of people in the future, but potentially. But on the other hand, we have to respect, of course, the privacy rights and also, in part, the intellectual author rights of subjects that provided data or stories or myth and so on. And there has to be a balance between these rights and the interest of public access. Everybody demands informed consent and proposes anonymization as a strategy. That is really difficult. Informed consent in many communities that haven't daily access to computers is a very difficult thing to do. People can change their mind if they learn more in 5 years when internet comes in or so. The sons or daughters of speakers can also have a very different mindset 10 years later when the speaker is not alive anymore. So this is tricky. And also anonymization in very small communities where everybody knows everybody is also a very difficult issue. You can't really get anonym if you see the face or hear the voice of a speaker. And the international context of online websites is even more complicated, as the all different local and national laws come in. So in Dobis, we took this seriously. We have a code of conduct which tries to solve some of the problems, but we have some agreements. But I think the most important thing in all this business is trust between the different people, especially the archive and the depositors, but also the speakers and the depositors and the users and the archive and so on. We've got four levels of access. Some resources are directly accessible. They are open. For many, you have to register and to agree with the code of conduct before you can access them. Others, you have to request the user's rights for a certain amount of time or a certain purpose or so. And others are so sensitive that they are closed to anybody except the depositor and the speakers themselves. So, summing up, what are the key challenges for sustainable data? As I said, in order to preserve data for long times, you have the bitstream preservation problem, but you have also the problem of interpretability. You have the problem to give easy and quick access, so to identify the right resources, where are they, in which center, in which network, in which format, and so on. You need metadata and metadata standards in order to do that. And once you have identified the data, the question is how to access the data. Should you download it? Do you see it online, in web services, or in other interfaces? Public access, I already thematized, so the code of conduct might be a solution for some cases. But to be responsible and to create trust is the most important thing in this business. To give the data back, we saw nice examples today in book form or on DVD or whatever people might have for means to play data. As I said, the Avicii love the CDs with old stories and they listen to them at night or look DVD documentation and instead of the telenovela of the Brazilian television. Mm-hmm. So it is very important that people really access the data, but you need standards for this. You have to be sure that different networks cooperate well one with another. You need data format agreements and so on in order to do this. We are planning that you can also write linguistic articles and directly cite pieces of data which are in the archive. This is possible already, but it's not easy to do. And we continue to develop our tools, and we believe that if we create good tools which are easy to use, this will lead people to adhere to standards, because good tools can produce good standards, and that will help the whole business to continue, that people share standards and access to code. So this is what we do. We support most stages in the life cycle for language documentation data. Thank you very much.
Thank you.